This week on Community Conversations, Big Joe and Melissa are discussing the county's syringe services program and the characteristics of their clients. Take it away, Joe and Melissa.
Good morning, Santa Cruz. This is Big Joe. I'm at the windmill on the east side with my pal Melissa, and I got her looking at the January 2019 Syringe Services Program report of characteristics of their clients. And I'm really curious to see what she has to say about this. Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for asking. Hey, check out that report and let me know what you think.
Okay, so I think it's good. Let's just break it down from beginning to end. So for the month of January 2019, the Emmeline Clinic saw 177 visits. So what that means is that out of those 177 visits, there were 121 people, unique identified people who accessed the Emmeline Clinic.
So there were a couple people that went more than once is what that's saying, right?
That's exactly what that means, is that out of all those visits, some people will make multiple visits to a needle program. So, out of those people who visited, it looks like 86 did a single visit in that time period versus 35 who did multiple visits. So it looks like about 71% of people who accessed that program this month did just one single visit for needles. So let's talk about gender and race. So it looks like the program services 58% male for this month, 42% female. Now out of that, 88% is white versus 10% that's Latino. So we've got 106 white people, 12 Latino, and 3 other races accessing this program. Which is kind of interesting to think about because this program also runs a clinic in Watsonville. And if you look at the numbers, they're really, really lower for how many people access these kind of services. And I don't know if it's their lack of outreach in that community that they've been able to tell people that it even exists, but it's an interesting thing to kind of note.
Well, it could be, too, that we have more drug addicts in the city of Santa Cruz than we do in Watsonville because of the criminal dumping that goes on.
Well, criminal dumping and also just access to services. So all the services are at Emmeline, and then the jail is downtown. So yeah, it makes sense that, you know, it could be everything could be located more in the city. So that's a good point. So out of those clients, those 120 unique IDs, 72 clients are homeless. So 60% of your clients for the month of January are currently not housed and homeless. So when you think about handing somebody a bunch of needles who's homeless, how are they storing that property? How are they caring for it?
Big bags of shit they carry.
Yeah, so on top of all their property, shopping carts, bikes, backpacks, you're handing them X amount of needles, possibly a Sharps disposal, which, you know, it's pretty bulky, wound care kit, normal saline, injection, plastic tubes, cookers, fentanyl testing strips, bleach, little cotton balls, wound care kits, condoms. The program also gives out personal hygiene products, so like toothbrush, toothpaste, shampoos. So, moving moving on, let's talk about visits that happened this month. So primary visits, meaning that the person who's accessing the program is only getting syringes for themselves. They're saying, I'm here just for myself. I need syringes. 48 clients were there for themselves the month of January. Now, secondary syringes for self and others, meaning I go into the program and I say, I'm a drug addict, I need needles. My partner is a drug addict, I need needles for them too. They're unable to come. That's how it was explained to me by the SSP staff, is that normally what that is a addict who has a partner who may be disabled and unable to come get syringes for themselves. Out of those 121 clients, 67% are doing secondary exchange, which is kind of concerning, because when you think about it, what that means is that the person who has the addiction problem is not being seen by anybody. They're not actually accessing the program to get the education that comes along with harm reduction. HIV, Hep C, testing education, medical referrals, any kind of referrals to any kind of treatment programs. So you're relying on that person who comes to get those syringes to then pass on that information to that next person you're giving them to.
Plus, there's also this medical component that goes along with it, where when you're being seen by one of these counselors and you have a cyst, boil, cut, bruise that's not getting treated at the clinic, it's going to fester or get infected to the point where now you're looking at Dominican, right?
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, you know, the reason harm reduction programs normally are staffed by medical professionals is for this reason, so that a client is accessing care and the nurse does a 5 to 10 minute health assessment, skin assessment. Let me see your track marks. Where do you shoot up? Maybe they give them a little education to help them understand how they could actually prevent an infection, and also what to look for a wound so that it doesn't become an ICU admission, a cellulitis that's going to require IV antibiotics. You can catch it, you can send them to the clinic, they can get oral antibiotics, they can get them right there, they can access pharmacy. So if you're doing secondary exchange, the person who's shooting up at home or out in the bushes that's getting needles from somebody else, they're not accessing care. So nobody is looking at them or following up on their health status. So that's a really important point to make to the community when you're thinking about harm reduction for the addict. So let's talk about these visits. So on average, the amount of needles dispensed per visit at the MLI clinic are 308.
Oh my God.
So I'm a little confused.
It said somewhere that it was up to 15. And if you needed more than 15, you had to get a note from your mom or something, right?
So here's the deal. The county's program actually states that up to a maximum of 100 syringes will be dispensed per visit. If it goes above 100, that would require a medical exemption, meaning that the physician who is responsible for the county, which I believe is still Dr. Leff, would have to sign an exemption saying that this client needs access to more syringes due to some type of medical condition they have. So what's interesting to note is that out of the syringes dispensed per visit, the number of clients who received 100 to 199 was 40. So 23% of those clients received more than 100. Now, also, what's crazy is 200 200 plus syringes. 81 clients received more than 200 syringes per visit. So what you're talking about is literally 121 people who should have a medical exemption on file at the county, which I would be really curious to see those. I would be
is
really,
that a public record or is that a HIPAA thing?
Well, what's interesting is that the SSP program does not actually require identification to access it. So I don't even understand how a medical exemption is given when you don't even take a person's real name down to access their medical file to understand why they would need that many syringes. So
I thought they dumped them in a bucket.
So they dump them.
So poured them in a bucket.
So the client takes their container, whatever they bring their needles in, and they dump it in a bigger, giant, sharps container bucket, which is then weighed. So those individual needles are not counted. It's not a perfect science, weighing, right? Because some needles might be weighed down. They might have stuff in them versus needles that don't have a cap attached versus regardless.
Some that might be full of water.
Yeah, regardless, it's not a one-to-one. You can't call a one-to-one would be that an addict puts their needles into a container where I can visualize and actually hand count them. I don't need to touch them. They could put them into a container, a flat, let's just say a cookie sheet. Lay them out, right? They're their needles. They can touch them. It's not going to harm me to look and count and then ask them to take that, those needles, and then dump them into a sharps container.
Unless you're coming in with 300 needles.
Yeah, if you're coming in with 300 needles,
that's
going to be...
apparently what these people are doing.
Well, that's going to be really hard and time-consuming to count. So, yeah. If you have 20 visits per day per client who's bringing back 300 needles, which begs an interesting question. So on Monday, I get 300 needles. On Tuesday, I visit again. So in that one day, I used 300 needles, huh, to shoot dope.
And you're still got a pulse.
And I'm still alive. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's something.
So it kind of goes back to the circular point of secondary exchange. So what I think is occurring is that an addict is going to the clinic. They're getting 308 needles for themselves and whoever else. And then what they do with those needles, we could just take a guess. So I'm an addict and I need money for drugs. Now I have all the supplies to be able to do those drugs. But my buddy doesn't. But he has $5. And he's willing to give me $5 because he doesn't know about the needle program. Because he's new to Santa Cruz. He's not well versed on the politics of this town, what services are available that are free. Or maybe he doesn't want to identify because he's worried that there may be a camera there may be cops there. So go get me some needles. I will pay you for that. So it's another way to just kind of, you know, help the addict further their addiction to make money off of a free service.
And Melissa, do you know anything about the harm reduction team that was created last April and how secondary exchange works? I saw a video on the Santa Mierda's website, or not website, but Facebook page. Maybe it was the homeless outreach guys. It was one of them. I saw a video where there were these three or four people that were at a shopping cart full of syringe stuff, and they were passing it out at the Ross camp. Were they passing that stuff out to clients with unique IDs or just random?
So that's what's interesting, because if the SSP program is going to say that it's a HIPAA standard program, right, where you can't violate somebody's anonymity, it's interesting that you would choose a very public place with no screen, no nothing. I think as we all saw in that video of the Levy needle handout, there were people just standing there, and a person was saying, here you go, handed them a bag of needles. Oh, did you want Narcan too? There was no counseling. There was no education. I didn't notice anybody marking down any information, like how how many needles were given per person that walked up, which is interesting because these are all policies and procedures of the county that if the county is going to run a mobile exchange, which they have the right to do, who is staffing that mobile exchange? And where is it published that they're doing that? Because they're supposed to communicate with the community. And also, there's supposed to be standards. So that data of what they're handing out is supposed to be captured. Every Narcan kit they dispense is supposed to be captured. Every education offered, every referral, every client, the client's age, their race. This is the only stats they collect. They don't actually collect identification.
They want these people to be comfortable in their anonymity.
Exactly, which means that none of these referrals can be traced, that they're actually doing any good or they're actually causing further harm. Because as you know, harm reduction is meant to stop the spread of disease. So a big component of why they want clean needles out there is to stop the spread of HIV and hepatitis C. Makes sense, right? Nobody wants these diseases to be spread among these communities.
Yeah, we have 500 new cases each year, HIV-related bloodborne pathogens. New cases, 500 each year.
Which is really sad because we actually have given away, I believe, I mean, in the past 6 months. Okay, let's just talk about January. So in the month of January, the total number of syringes dispensed just for the month of January was 54,597 needles.
Yeah, like 45,000 last month.
So we can basically say that we have plenty of needles, clean needles, floating around in our community. Even for your most hardcore addict that possibly shoots up 20 times a day, there are enough clean needles, right? So there should be no reason for HIV or Hep C to spread through IV drug use and sharing of equipment when we have that many needles floating around in our community. But what's interesting, Joe, to note is that the county program collects data on the education that's offered. So for the month of January, out of those 121 clients, only 32 were offered information about HIV and Hep C testing. So this is what's sad also about the program. When I go in to get my needles, wouldn't it make sense that I am offered to be tested for HIV and Hep C on site right there? Would you like to be tested so that we can make sure you're
safe? If you make a 2 o'clock appointment for them on Tuesday or next Wednesday, they're not going to make the appointment.
Well, yeah, I'm homeless, and now I've got to walk with all of my belongings to another location to get tested. Doesn't really make sense when your county building is right there, right? If you staffed it with a nurse, she could do the testing, easy, send it off, and then she's the person who's constantly in contact with these people because they're coming back to the program to access the service. So those relationships are built with a trusted nurse-patient relationship where there's no judgment. It's just compassion. Us nurses understand that people are going to use drugs. We're not there to judge you. We're not there to chastise you. We're there to offer you a hand of hope that when the day comes that you get sick and tired of being homeless and using drugs, that we will be there to offer you every available service if you want a different choice. And if you don't, and you want to continue to use drugs for the next 30 years, we will offer you the service to do that safely with clean needles and equipment and accountability so that if you ever do have hepatitis or HIV, you are counseled to not pass that on to someone else in the community, which is why it's important to collect that data so that when you're talking with one of these clients who possibly does have hepatitis, you impart to them the harm that they could do to other people. if they are not safe themselves. Harm reduction, that's the whole point, that's the whole mantra.
But it appears these harm reduction teams that we have running around in Santa Cruz County are just passing needles out like they're Johnny Appleseed.
Well,
they aren't passing them out to clients. There's nobody being identified. It's a guy says, I need 20. They pull two bags out of their little shopping cart behind Ross and start handing shit out.
Well, and it would be great if they could actually identify the backgrounds of the people that work these programs. When I asked the person who ran this program, she said it was a mixture of ex-substance use people, UCSD students, members of the community that have dealt with addiction. I never got a response of an actual licensed healthcare professional that worked there, meaning someone who's trained to recognize the signs and symptoms of bad wounds that need to be addressed, to actually treat somebody in a medical fashion, which is harm reduction recognizes that addiction is a disease, just like diabetes or heart disease. So how do you want to attack that problem? Do you want to attack it with someone who is spending their life educating themselves to educate the community, like a nurse who deals with this every day in their practice? And actually based on evidence-based research, not just the feeling they have about, oh, I feel good because I handed you a bag of needles, but I have no idea what you're going to do with those needles, but it makes me feel better. And I can tell you right now, as a nurse who lives in this community and who has lived in this community my entire life, it doesn't make me feel good to see hundreds of needles being passed out and hundreds of kits of Narcan being passed out, and then what happens to my community? I can go down to my local beach in Seabright, and within 5 minutes, I can pick up a dirty needle that's uncapped, that's sharp. I have to tell my seven-year-old, watch out for orange tips. Watch out for needles, honey. You can't play in the driftwood.
You're never going to see an uncapped needle on the beach if you're 7 years old. 10 years old. You'll never see it.
Yeah, but also what nobody wants to recognize, what I find even more sad as a health professional, is remember the article back in November 2018 that the Sentinel did on the two men that died?
Yeah, the ones in the Ross parking lot.
So one died at the Gateway Plaza, and then one was found covered up
in a ditch.
In a ditch.
After the other buns had rifled through his pockets.
Well, no, this is what's very sad and telling about the article. It states in the article that three doses of Narcan were sitting by. So you know what that makes me think, Joe? Is that people thought they were helping this addict. They walked by, he obviously OD'd. They administered three doses of Narcan because that's what they're told to do, right? Oh, give Narcan, you will save somebody. But are they told that also once you administer Narcan, you should call 911? Because Narcan has a time frame. There is such a thing as Narcan relapse, meaning I administer Narcan, you come back to me, you seem fine, but you actually have a lot of drugs in your system, and over time, you nod off again, and you become unconscious. And then you choke on your own vomit because you're laying on your back, because they don't put you in recovery position, they don't call 911, and you're left to die in the cold.
They're too busy robbing the body.
Well, and this is what is so sad about that case. This person was 39 years old. I'm 39, okay? If you want to say that you are reducing harm to a community, who's this person's family? Has anybody done a follow-up story? Does anybody care? You handed him a Sharps container, a bunch of needles, and a bunch of Narcan, and you left him in a ditch to die.
You know what I would find interesting with this, if I were a family member, is how many times did either of these two individuals that we're talking about get on a waiting list for rehab, only to have this 10-week wait? You have to make a phone call every day to reserve your spot in line, fall off off the list somehow, only to be back in the life?
I can tell you it would be a sad story, because there are a lot of people who are looking to access services in this town, rehab, like real meaningful inpatient rehab, because they know they can't do it through AA or NA. They're not capable of just limping along. They need a true medical detox. And as you know, we don't have enough beds in this town.
You know what I find interesting is I look through Board of Supervisors budget stuff. And this year, we're giving them Compass $7 million. We're giving Janus $8 million. That's $15 million for rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Who's getting this stuff?
Well, it would be interesting to actually follow. What you need to do is follow the rates of how many days these people are staying in these programs, and then that'll tell you the meaningful change that's happening.
Hey, before we go, Melissa, if Ryan Coonerty, our district supervisor, were listening to this right now, or Eric Riera, or any of these other Yahoos, Mimi Hall, what message would you give them?
The message that I would give anybody who actually has the ability to change the program is to actually run it based on best practices. We're spending the money anyways, so hire nurses to run these clinics. You could hire me. There's plenty of local nurses who would sign up right now to run this program and would do it and would make sure that it was run properly with accountability, with compassion, with care, with building trust again with our local community, so that people can feel confident that when those syringes are given out, it's meaningful. It's given out with compassion, but also accountability that we're going to get those needles back. They're not going to be in our local community. Your kid's not going to step on one. And we're not going to give hundreds of needles out without also linking it to referrals. We're going to actually be able to tell the community we have lowered the rate of HIV and hepatitis C. We have gotten people into treatment because we're going to track it, and we're actually going to help these people who want help, and the people that don't, they're still going to get the help, but we're actually going to not do more harm to the community for this small group of individuals. Remember, we're talking about 121 individuals right now in the month of January. So what is the harm done to the over thousands of people that live in this community versus what we are supposed to provide for 121 people? That's what I want Ryan Coonerty to think about. That's what I want Mimi Hall to think about, because Mimi Hall, as a health educated professional, knows that this program is not being run correctly. There's no data to back it up.
And lastly, what would the fate of the harm reduction team be? These Denise Ellerick and her band of merry men passing needles out in the forest to people that aren't clients of the SSP.
That needs to be reined in and monitored, because if I'm giving Denise Ellerick or any community members of a separate organization needles, I need to know that I'm getting them back. And until they can prove that to me, they're not getting my free supplies. Until they can actually show me that the program they're running is valid and is based on science, not based on just an enabling lack of accountability. Here you go, here's a baggie of needles, here's some Narcan, doesn't really matter.
See, me as a taxpayer and somebody that may or may not care about the health and welfare of this particular group of people, I at a minimum want them to be seen by an RN, like someone like you, because I want them to continually be faced with the rehab. I want them to have their wounds treated and sores, lanced, or whatever it is these people do. And I don't believe that the harm reduction team has, one, those qualifications, or two, are monitoring it in any way, shape, or form, because they don't know who the fuck they're passing these needles out to.
Well, and honestly, that's the problem.
In fact, the people they're passing these needles out to, they don't even know there's such a thing as the SSP. How the fuck is that possible?
Well, that's what I find really interesting, too, is that by them passing out those needles, those people that now learn about SSP don't actually go to SSP because they know they can just go to Ellerick and her team and get a baggie of needles. So they don't actually have to go access anything.
All right. Well, that's definitely Melissa, thank you so much for enlightening me. It's always a pleasure to talk to a medical professional.
Thanks, Joe.
And that wraps up this week's Community Conversations on the Santa Muerta Podcast Network. I want to thank Joe and Melissa for a terrific discussion. Thanks for listening. Thank you.